Te reo ererangi o te mānia. This episode was produced in Otatahi by Plains Media, with support from New Zealand On Air.
Assalamu alaikum, kia ora, and welcome to In Transit, the series where we center the many journeys of immigrant ethnic women navigating life in Aotearoa, New Zealand, with me, your host, Hafsa. In each episode, I sit down with women who share their journeys of settling in a new land, the challenges they have faced, and the resilience that carried them through. From cultural clashes to quiet triumphs, and from moments of doubt to deep appreciation. These are raw, honest, and hopeful conversations. Whether you're new to the country or simply curious, this is your space to listen, learn, and connect. Kia ora and welcome to another episode of our podcast. And today with me, I have a new guest, Maria. So welcome, Maria.
Kia ora, Hafsa. Thank you very much for inviting and having me.
Thank you, Maria. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, my name is Maria Burdain. I am from Uruguay. I was born in a city called Salto in the north of Uruguay. It is quite close to Argentina and Brazil. I had been in New Zealand for the last 22 years, all the time living in Oamaru and Otago. I am a mother of three adult children and a grandmother of two beautiful granddaughters. My kids were all born in Uruguay. I am a clinical psychologist and I worked for 11 years in Uruguay and Montevideo as a psychoanalytical therapist. And I have retrained in New Zealand with a Bachelor of Social Services. And after 19 years long process, I am a registered member of the New Zealand Association of Counselors. So I work as a mental health clinician for a primary health organization called Wills House. And that's a almost full-time job. And I do a little bit of work also for diversity counseling, working with migrants and former refugees in Spanish, which is very lovely for me. So that's a little bit about me.
Wow. That's so impressive. Right. So you've been here about 22 years. So tell us a little bit about what was the first day in New Zealand like when you landed here?
Yeah, so the first day, so I arrived in New Zealand in November 2003. And as I said before, straight to Oamaru during the Victorian Week celebrations in Oamaru. And my husband that came before, you know, me and my family didn't tell me one thing about the Victorian celebration. So we drove, you know, around town and I saw a lot of people wearing Victorian outfits and, you know, just the penny farthing bikes. And he was very quiet, not smiling. So I was like, where is this town? So that's my first memory of, you know, arriving in New Zealand in Oamaru. Yeah, we were part of the victorious celebration. Then the other things that I can always remember on my first day, we have a workmate, you know, from my husband coming with a present, and he brought some coal for the fire, you know, place. And it was in November, so at home, normally in November, it's very, very hot. So I was, what kind of present is this? You know, like a big bag of coal. And the next day, we actually had to call him to show us how to light the fire. And it was the best present because it was very, very cold. So those are some of the memories of my first day in New Zealand.
You had to use the fireplace, I'm guessing, in November.
Yes, and sometimes in December in Nanoamaru as well. Yes.
Wow. Oh, interesting.
Yes,
And tell us a little bit about, what was happening back in Uruguay when you decided to come here. And, you mentioned your family came here before you. Just a little bit around why you decided to come here and, how that process kind of unfolded.
Yes. So sadly, in 2000, it was a huge economic crisis in South America around Argentina, Brazil, and Uruguay. So, Uruguay being a small country between these two big countries, anything that goes wrong in our neighbors' countries, we know that it's going to be, hard in Uruguay. So, my husband started to thinking about coming to or leaving Uruguay. And our first thought, and he went before to US, but then he decided, and we decided that it wasn't the best place for our family. And so someone, a friend of us that lived in Australia, and it was in Uruguay then, told us about New Zealand. And so we started to planning and thinking about moving to New Zealand. Sadly for us, it wasn't my intention to, leave Uruguay. But by 2002, when my husband went to US and then came to New Zealand, we pretty much lost everything. So it was quite hard to afford private education, private health, and sadly, public education and public health wasn't good enough for the family. So that was the situation. We pretty much lost everything, and so we start all over again in New Zealand. So I was working. I was working as a therapist. We used to have an institute where we were tutoring students, high school students. So my husband was a math teacher, and that was what we used to do. But yeah, the changes were really, really big. And so yeah, this big economic crisis was the one that pushed us to move, to leave the country. Yeah.
Yeah, so it was new beginnings here in New Zealand then.
Definitely new beginnings. So my husband came 8 months before the family, and while he was here, we discussed that it will be a really good place for us, Dunedin, because our eldest son was 16 years old. So we thought there would be a really good place for him to go to uni. But he started looking for jobs in Auckland, Wellington, Christchurch, and finally Dunedin. And yeah, the first job was here in Oamaru as a math teacher. And yeah, we stay and stay. He worked only for few terms as a math teacher, but yeah, we stayed here in Oamaru.
And you've still stayed there.
And we are still here. Yes.
So
Yes.
tell me a little bit about the initial days in terms of, what that looked like and felt like, because, your husband, you said, was working as a maths teacher.
Yes.
And then when you joined in, how does that the work environment look, and what helped, and what were the challenges?
Well, big challenges because in my case, I didn't speak English when I first came to New Zealand. So I knew that it was going to be a little bit of a challenge for me. And so the first year was pretty much trying to learn the language. But obviously, moving to a rural town was a very, different situation, and we didn't have a lot of services in Oamaru for many, many years. And it was for me a very inspiring to try to bring new kind of ways of learning in Omaruka services were really, really basic. So I have to, my work experience was the first job that I got was working in a hostel environment. So serving food to, breakfast, lunch, and dinner for students in the St. Kevin Hostel. And so there was a really good experience for me to be around people speaking English, and the students helped me quite a lot. And then from there, when I felt a little bit more confident, I went into a dental assistant, which is was not, I have no experience whatsoever, but it was, almost 11 years working as a dental assistant while I was, obviously with my husband working very hard to support the kids and, and starting the new life here in New Zealand.
As a dental assistant.
As a dental assistant.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you talked about, you mentioned in your introduction about the amount of time it has taken for you to now practice, not as a psychologist, but as a social worker.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about that journey.
So the journey was obviously I knew that I have to be, learn English and understand 100%. And so every job that I took, gave me that, the listening skills and the English skills. And for a while, I also I work in a school teaching Spanish, and so I had like a limited authority to teach, and that was my first time that I needed to study and get an IELTS test. So once I got, the IELTS test, I thought that that is a good time to think about going back to study, and it wasn't easy. So going to the universities, going to the psychologist board, going to the counselors board, going to different, polytechnics and universities, trying to find a way. And it was always very difficult, especially because the amount of years that I didn't practice. So finally, I came across the opportunity with Otago Polytechnic Capable New Zealand, where they recognize your work experience, which in my case, I didn't have any work experience in New Zealand. So I had to create almost like my work experience, and that was working with migrants. So for me already, I was already involved with the Waitaki Multicultural Council, and so I established a group called Migrants Meet and Share, and I decided to go for the social services because that will allow me to work supporting migrants, and that was the initial idea. Obviously, the social services, the Bachelor of Social Services, wouldn't give me the registration as a social worker, and I knew that. And so, after doing this year, really intense because it was almost one-on-one with a facilitator working, and it took me more than a year to get the Bachelor of Social Services through Capable and the cross credit with my Bachelor of Psychology as well. Almost a year after graduation, I found the first job in New Zealand supporting families and mental health and addiction. And it was, once again, it was a Southland in Otago organization called Able Minds, and I felt very grateful for that opportunity because locally in Oamaru was very hard for me to find jobs, have so many interviews, and they were very thankful for my time, etc., etc. But I wasn't really, getting any jobs in Oamaru. So it really took someone from outside my local community to give me this first opportunity. So I work as a field worker in mental health and addiction, and quickly found myself obviously using my background and doing a lot of counseling and as a field worker. So I decided that it was time for me to go back to more studies. And luckily my facilitator, she was a counselor, and she really encouraged me to go back and do the counseling side. So I went back through Capable, but this time it was the time when the polytechnics became Tipukinga. And so what was taught as an external subject degree counseling, became internal. So in my case, was about having interviews, working with my facilitator, working with my supervisors, and working with the New Zealand Association of Counselors to see how can I become a provisional member of the New Zealand Association of Counselors. So it was a very, very hard work, and I feel extremely supported by my supervisors, cultural supervisors, and my supervisor, still my supervisor currently. And that was how I got provisional membership. And just before, like a month before getting my provisional membership, I applied for a job, which is the job that I got today. And I had the best job interview, and it was online with all my things fresh from my provisional membership, from my application. And they decided that they are going to give me this job as a mental health clinician. So you need to send me your annual practice certificate. And I don't have an annual practice certificate. So we can't really give you the job. So I had to wait, but it was, it was the practice certificate was on the way. And so I received on the 3rd of November, 2022, I received my annual practice certificate on the 3rd of November. And then on the 4th of November, I got my job offer because I called in and said, I got the annual practice certificate now. And since then, I had been, working from Wales House. But yeah, it was a very, very long and painful process, where sometimes you feel, so many times you feel like, what is really the point? So you feel tired, discouraged, and but at some point it was needed the support of a lot of people to get there.
And a lot of determination.
A lot of determination, definitely.
Yeah, and you did mention that at some point in time you were feeling like, what is the point of all this?
Yes, exactly.
You at any point in time consider that you might want to take up a different career option?
At some point, I thought that I am just going to leave it here and I'm going to just keep doing what I, had been doing. But yeah, it was always, I guess, that it is my passion. So helping people, and it's vocational. And so, it was sometimes you're just stopping and resetting and recharging and going back. And it was always about finding the support. So I got really wonderful people supporting me. And especially the time at Capable was a time where I felt that it was possible. It was possible that it was a pathway to get the registration.
And you did speak about support. So I want to ask a few more questions about support.
Yes.
Yes. What kind of support? I know, was it just professional support or was it personal support?
Obviously, It is the encouragement of, your family as well. My husband is very supportive and he was always there supporting me. My children, of course, they sometimes felt like, well, why are you still, trying to do this if it is, very hard? But they were all very supportive. And friends, to have the group, especially the multicultural group, where you have the chance to talk with other people that may be in the same situation, and that you share the same kind of worries and the same issues, it was really very, very good for me. And professionally, obviously, the people that were at Otago Polytechnic and later my supervisors were an amazing support, and I feel really privileged at work as well. So my last job before getting my registration, they were also very supportive with professional development in allowing me to practice, really, because to get your provisional membership, you have to have 200 hours of practice in New Zealand. And so how do you get those 200 hours of practice in New Zealand if you are not, a counselor? And so working in that environment, they allowed me to, support clients. And that's how I got the 200 hours. And also the work with migrants, it was something that allowed me to do some, obviously, some hours as well. So, yeah, that was the kind of support needed. Yeah.
So 200 hours.
200 hours, 30 hours of supervision and cultural supervision as well. And so for going back to counseling, the organization that I was working for supported me in part, but I have to pay, my supervision, so which was very expensive. So the amount of, what you earn per hour working as a field worker, it doesn't really pay, your supervision. So, working very, very hard to get those supervision hours as well.
And you pointed out that 200 hours plus. So obviously you had to have like a proper job or something to be able to do that, or was it a bit
well,
of a...
Well, I was working, by then I was working full time as a mental health and addiction field worker. Yeah, but really, earning it was, earning as a support worker, really.
And that is hard to get access to, right?
Very hard to access to, yes.
Because, even then because you mentioned about getting just a professional first.
Yes, exactly. Well, I am at the moment, I am in the process of, applying for full membership. And for full membership, you have to have 300 hours, so that means after you get provisional, you have to get 300 hours, which obviously now I have a lot more, because I work full time, and as well you have to get the supervision, cultural supervision, etc., plus writing few assignments to get the full membership. It's not like only time, is a lot of work.
So you really have to be very determined to be able to survive.
Yes. The focus, and very determined to get there.
Good luck with that, Maria.
Thank you very much, because so many times I thought, no, I'm just not going to do, full membership. I will work my 5 years as a provisional membership and then see what I do. But obviously my supervisors are, no, you are going to do full membership. Yes.
That is good supervisors there.
Very good supervisors.
So I do want to ask a little bit more about the multicultural space you have been involved in, Maria, and you have spoken about that, you started with getting involved in that space, and you mentioned that that's where you had friends from. So tell me a little bit more about that multicultural space and how you got involved and, what that space feels like.
So the Waitaki Multicultural Council was established in Oamaru in 2008. So I was still very new. And so that's how I got involved with the Waitaki Multicultural. But I didn't have time then to volunteer because I was working full time, the three children and family. And so by 2016, I decided that I wanted to go back to studies and I needed to have this project. So I approached the Waitaki Multicultural Committee and I mentioned that I would like to do this project. And they were really good supporting me. So the coordinator that was leading, the group. She supported me with that, and so that's how I got involved. This started as a fortnightly group, and so it was about just getting together, having a cuppa, and talking and chatting about, how is life and what are the issues and the hopes and et cetera. And quickly became a weekly activity because it was really positive group. At the same time, so the Waitaki Multicultural belongs to the Multicultural New Zealand organization, which is a nationwide organization that have different regional multicultural councils. And by 2017, 2018, they were piloting a project which is called a Woman's Wellbeing Framework, which at the moment we are refreshing this the framework as well. But I put my hand up to pilot this project in Oamaru, and so I did. And obviously, with my background, I also took notes of every project. And some of those notes were a very good information for getting more funding. So we were very lucky to have more funding from J.R. McKinsey. And so we ran this pilot for another year. And before COVID, it went around New Zealand. So that's how I got involved with Multicultural New Zealand. And I got offered the opportunity to do some cross-cultural training with Victoria University. So once again, it was this opportunity. I went there and only two people got picked, and I was the lucky one of the lucky ones. And so it took me almost like 2 years to get the training done through Victoria University, and we were traveling through different parts of New Zealand doing a cross-cultural, but it was for community groups, so North Island and South Island. And it was again really amazing opportunity for me. So I got, closer to multicultural New Zealand. And and 3 years ago, so it was 2022, 2023, 2022, 22, I became acting national secretary of Multicultural New Zealand. And then I had been elected for the last 3 years as a national secretary, which is once again a completely different experience that you give so much time as advocating, and there's quite a lot going on, obviously. So it is a juggling work and volunteer work, but that's allowed me to travel around New Zealand, meeting amazing leaders in different parts of the country. And so we Multicultural New Zealand is a Te Tiriti based organization, so we have traveling around with doing Ojo Morales and doing some workshops about preventing family violence and against racism and so many other topics that are part of our ethnic communities. So that's how I got involved. Everything from Oamaru to to the rest of New Zealand.
Yeah, and so with the multicultural communities and the work that you've been doing with multicultural communities, I would assume that, that's where you made a lot of friends.
Yes, definitely lots and lots and lots of friends from all different cultures that I never, dreamed before of meeting people from, so many different countries and so many different cultures. Yeah, really good friends.
Yeah. So with the friends from different cultures, how important was that? Because you've had a bit of a fair struggle in terms of getting through to, well, I'm still trying to get to where you want to be. So how important has these friendships been as part of that journey?
Very important. And I guess that, I was just reflecting about, I do have some good Kiwi friends, but majority of my friends are from different cultures and different countries. And I think it is just a common ground that we share, the common experience that we share, even though if we are from, completely different cultures, different religions, different realities. But there is that sense of understanding what it means to settle in a new country, what it means, sometimes feeling not accepted or not, included, or like you don't belong sometimes. So for me, it has been a very interesting, I'd say, experience trying to, being accepted in a small community. Everything works in a different way. Once again, I always talked about the Waitaki way of doing things, which may be quite different from, Dunedin or Christchurch.
Yeah, so now you mentioned about settling into a new country, sometimes the challenges, and you mentioned about the interesting experiences when you are trying to settle in. I guess I'm really curious to hear some of the interesting experiences. If you are willing to share, I'd be very keen to hear that.
I guess that, Oamaru has changed so much in the last 22 years, but I always tell the story that I was quite like a rare, thing when I moved to Oamaru because first, and I always tell the same story. So too white to be brown, too brown to be white. Why you don't speak English? So, and we didn't really have, as I mentioned before, services and here ways to learn English. So I have to really rely on volunteers that were, helping me with English, some correspondence schools, resources. That was the way for me to learn the language. And so it was very, very hard. So the reality now in Oamaru and Waitaki is different because we are just like anywhere else in New Zealand, a multicultural community. But there were so many barriers, obviously there, and so it has been part of, the our goals to bring more opportunities for the new migrants settling, here, because there are so many people that come here for a little while and then they find other opportunities and they leave. And so it is quite nice to think about people staying in our beautiful place of the world because we do have options and we do have services and we do have, activities, which, now is very, very different.
So, you know, obviously many of those might come from your experiences, you know, in terms of the
Yes.
activities and the stuff that's established there. You mentioned about this whole idea of the migrants meet and share. So tell me a little bit about that.
So the migrants meet and share, the idea was really simple. It was just to have a place where we could feel safe and talked about whatever we wanted to talk. And it was really changing, and it's still, now is still, going, but in a different format. So it started as a simple, cup of tea, getting together, having fan. And then after I piloted this program where each time we have a guest speaker, and we have like a topic, the group really wanted to have that every week. So for a while we have like a guest speakers and or a theme, or we kind of programmed what we wanted to do. At some point it became almost like a classroom, like some English classes in the mix there as well. And then after COVID, we realized that not a lot of people have time to attend to those meetings anymore. And so we changed it for the nighttime. And so now it still is a monthly activity, which is almost like a potluck, because once again, after COVID, people couldn't bring, food. So we were providing some food. And now, because of some financial, issues, we are still providing the main meal. And but it's a different time. And once again, it's quite interesting, because we started as having a guest speaker every time and having dinner together. And at some point people, told us like, it is just nice to get together and, have fun and eat and relax. We don't need to have the guest speaker. So we went for a while without guest speakers. And now we are, again hearing people say, perhaps it's good to have like an activity or something. So it is always changing, which is good, because it's what people need. But it is really, really good. And we at the moment we run many activities, like our active program. There is some Latin dance, or at the moment is a box, with dancing included. There is a family group that meets every week. And we have really good English conversation, English as well, every week. So there are many, activities. And then we have our annual activities, and it's always looking for, different options. We also work a lot, and we have been very, lucky to connect with organizations like SHAMA, Women's Trust, and from Hamilton, to work around healthy relationships, family violence prevention, and cultural, cross-cultural workshops. So yeah, employment, workshops, everything that happened in the big cities, we try to bring also to the small towns.
Nice. And you know, I think that's such a good initiative to have, you know, just without the formality of making it too formal, or maybe even trying to just keep it simple, simple.
Well, it is, because one of the things that we always talk to is we are not services providers. So what we do is activities. What we do is support. What we do is advocating. But we also really need to listen the needs of the community. So most of the time it's liaising with the local services, and being able to really refer to when our families need the support.
So mostly about advocacy and connections.
Connections. Yep. Fun. Yes. Yes, yeah. Because isolation really is a huge problem in our region. For example, we don't have public transport in Oamaru, so people really struggle to, go to different places. So our migrants really help each other. We also have for a little while at the moment, it's not happening, but we have also the driving license lessons. And so because it's so important for our migrants to drive because it's not public transport here. Yeah, so many, many things.
Yeah, and look, I didn't know there is no public transport in Oamaru.
No public transport in Oamaru. It wasn't public transport 22 years ago. It's not public transport now. Yes.
And that becomes a barrier for people who do not have driving licenses. You know, even if I were to not look at migrant population, even for the elderly
It is.
communities.
Definitely. Yeah. So there are, different ways of obviously getting around. But Waitaki is a very huge district. So in the rural, areas are isolated. So and we do have migrants communities that are, and working rurally. So yeah, very interesting the mix.
Yeah, because that's a very different challenge, I would
Yes.
say.
Yeah.
You know, in addition to moving across countries and then trying to settle in, and then for some of us, the temperature, the weather becomes a challenge.
Oh yes, obviously yes. Everyone, we all get some, really good lessons about how to light the fire and what not to put in the fire. Yes,
All right.
it's
So,
running.
I guess as we come towards the last segment of our
Yes.
discussion, what I do want, and you mentioned about a little bit about these challenges, is in terms of being accepted and the challenges of belonging. So, I guess my first question, and you are, you learned about it, and you are kind of in that space around. Why does acceptance even matter in from a well-being perspective, if I were to look at it?
Yes, well, I guess that, when you come to a new place, and especially when that place is really different from where you come from, and you don't get the social connection, you become isolated and you become really self-doubting whether you ever going to, settle. I have so many times those questions. Am I ever going to be able to speak English? Am I ever gonna get, be able to get a job? Am I ever gonna be able to practice, again? So all of those, questions. At the same time, you are raising your kids, and you have to be strong for them because they are also going through that process. So my kids were 16, 12, and 3 years old when we moved. So all in different, stages. And so for my son, the 16 years old, it was quite easy for him to settle, and he did the last 2 years of high school here in Oamaru and quickly moved to Dunedin to go to university. We were also very lucky in the process of getting residency, and it was a little bit different 22 years ago, so we were very, very lucky. For my daughter, moving from co-ed education to only girls high school, it was really hard for her. And for the little one, obviously, he doesn't speak Spanish, in now. He's 24 years old now, but the process, it was, different. And it seems like it was an easy process for him. But later in life, all the identity, issues are there with, who am I and where am I from? And, So, yeah, so you have to really juggle between your own settlement process and being strong there for your children as well.
So a little bit about, because you mentioned about this,
is
in terms of how did you retain the identity, the Uruguayan identity?
So for me, is the way that I describe this is that my roots are Uruguayan. I am Uruguayan, and this is, you know, my values and my roots come from where I am from. But I always say that, you know, my branches and flowers and fruits are, you know, now in New Zealand. I always talked about how New Zealand has really helped me and welcomed me. And, you know, it's a place where I really feel that I have blossomed in here and have opportunities. I see the same, you know, for my husband and my kids. We all have, you know, and we are very grateful for the opportunities in New Zealand. But yes, my identity is, and I guess that I have learned in the Maori culture has helped me a lot to reflect about my own identity. Some, you know, all the looking into my ancestors and my roots, that's something that it wasn't, you know, something that we learned in Uruguay. You kind of accept that you are the mix, because Uruguayans, we are the mix of Italian and Spanish. And almost, you know, every Uruguayan is that mix. But we accept that we are Uruguayans, and we don't talk about being second generation or first generation, you know, Spanish or, you know, Italian. But yeah, really living in New Zealand and with the Maori culture, I think a lot and I reflect a lot about my ancestors and then obviously our indigenous people in Uruguay as well. That is something that we don't really get to discuss much, you know, in my country. So yeah, it is, I am so grateful for being in New Zealand and having this opportunity to explore more about my roots.
Very true, isn't it? So I think there are just a couple more questions that I kind of want to ask before we conclude our talk. Is I guess the question is around what you feel is New Zealand, in terms of New Zealand is home now or New Zealand's second home? What is New Zealand?
Yes, New Zealand is home now. In New Zealand, and especially Oamaru, I mean, it was really hard for me to settle down in the changes of, you know, coming from the capital. I mean, Uruguay is a small country, but still I was living in the capital. So it was such a huge, you know, change coming to a small, you know, rural town. I guess that when I have the opportunity to go back many times to Uruguay, and for the last probably 10 years going back, you know, home, it was kind of like feeling like a fish in the water every time that I landed, and I was already back into, you know, my water. And in the last time that I went to Uruguay was in December 2023. And for the first time, I felt like, I don't feel like a fish in the water anymore. And almost have that sensation that people moved on, you know, family and friends. And it's completely different, the relationship. So it is really hard for me to be away for more than 3 or 4 weeks. So I am there and I'm missing home, and home is New Zealand.
Nice. So my last question is, what advice would you give to someone who is coming to New Zealand from Uruguay?
Yes, exactly. So I kind of, you know, thought about advice, always observe. I listen first and reflect. And one of the things that I always think is that don't try to change and make this place look like, you know, home, or the things that you, you know, have at home, because there is a reason why you lived, and there is also a reason why you are still here and stay. So my advice is embrace the difference, be flexible and adaptable, but yeah, mainly that, embrace the differences and not try to, you know, make New Zealand look like home. Yeah.
That is such different advice I have heard, which I don't think anyone's given of the people who have interviewed.
Yeah,
I think that is such an important point you've mentioned, Maria, over there around. Yeah. Don't try and change it to make this place like home, because there's a reason you left that place.
So you live, and in my case, it's a reason why we stay also, isn't it? So, yeah, yes. And I mean, I do have Uruguayan friends, and of course, I love to, you know, meet with them and cook our traditional food, and I try to pass all the traditions to my kids as well. But, I don't try to live like I am in Uruguay, but I am in New Zealand. So I try to really embrace the differences and adapt to this, you know, country. Mm. There is a reason why we stay here.
Yeah. And of course, adapting with the good
things
that, you know, that have come in alongside when you are, when you've moved here.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Obviously that, you know, when you also get advice and people ask you about how is, you know, to live in New Zealand, it's not easy, and you're not trying to, you know, kind of not to say the truth, you know, it's not easy, but at the same time, I think it is, you know, a land of opportunities and a place where you can really, you know, feel home.
So what is the definition of home then?
Yes, home. Yeah, I think it is, for me, really, is a place where you can, and this is something that I think a lot about it. And I'm not really sure if, you know, Kiwis really have the idea that how lucky we are, like the song, you know. But New Zealand is a stable country. So when you come from, you know, countries like, you know, the country I come from, you go from crisis to crisis, you know, financial, economic crisis, political. We went through dictatorship, so many changes where you need to start all over again and again and again, you know, and to live in a country that is stable, that you know what's going to happen and you can plan for the future in one way or the other. So for me, home is the place where you feel calm, safe, and you can plan for the future, I think.
Thank you very much, Maria. It was so lovely talking to you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us on In Transit. If today's story moved you, taught you something new, or simply made you feel seen, we'd love for you to share this episode with someone else. Also, don't forget to tune in to Plains Media for the next episode. Until next time, remember, your story matters.